we've been working to try to identify some of the infrastructure that Volt Typhoon is using for their operations. On that infrastructure that we've been tracking, in December, we saw them target some Metscaler systems that they were probing. And then a few days after the vulnerability, and actually a little bit after the mass exploitation around January 19th to 22, we saw them probe like a pretty limited number of Vonti Connect Secure devices. So probably just over 10 different organizations. So these are, you know, aerospace, energy, some health, some educational institutions.
Welcome to another episode of Mandiant's Defenders Advantage podcast. I am your host, Luke McNamara. Joining me, two returning guests, John Wolfram, Tyler McClellan, two analysts here at Mandiant, back to talk some cyber espionage activity. Like, we talked about Turla when you guys were on here last. So shifting gears a little bit. Well, we talked about USBs, I think. USB malware, if I remember correctly, that involved Turla. But today we're going to be talking about a recent series of blogs, actually a four-part series that both of you were authors on and involved in some of the work related to this activity. This is the Avanti Connect Secure exploitation. And I think there's maybe to kind of kick us off, there's a convergence of a couple different themes that we have been talking about a lot throughout the past year. This would be themes around, you know, the increase in 0 days that we saw from 2022 to 2023. Great blog on this from our colleagues at TAG and others at Mandiant. This would be the convergence of the theme around living on the edge and threat actors, particularly Chinese Nexus APTs and others exploiting that for follow-on activity. And this is something I think for folks that, again, you know, have read our recently released MTrends report, one of the big themes we highlight is this focus on evasion that we're seeing more and more by threat actors. So I think all those things kind of appear in this series of blogs, but maybe to kick us off, you know, what took place in this compromise and what do we cover in these four blogs?
Yeah, sure. I'm happy to kick this off. So this four-parter, which I can't remember the last time we had a four-part blog series, covers our findings from responding to multiple investigations related to the exploitation of vulnerabilities in the Avanti Connect Secure appliances, formerly known as Pulse Secure. Our blogs cover a wide range of threat actors and detail everything we found from malware families, post-exploitation activity, lateral movement TTPs, and all of the kind of things that you'd expect to come with a global espionage campaign targeting edge appliances.
And maybe, you know, so to talk about like the actual activity that we witnessed and what we tied to this particular threat actor, UNC 5221, what took place as part of this initial operation? How did that unfold?
Yeah, so I think it's probably best to start with that first blog that came out. And so that blog, the first part of the Cutting Edge series, details our findings from the investigation into zero-day exploitation of two vulnerabilities in the Avanti Connect Secure appliances. From our investigation, we identified that starting in early December, a suspected espionage cluster that we track as UNC 5221 was targeting Avanti Connect Secure appliances with a zero-day that allowed them to get command injection, like authentication bypass and command injection, to enable them to drop tons of different types of malware, everything from web shells to passive backdoors.
And this is something, again, like a theme that we've seen throughout last year, where technologies such as VPNs have been targeted and then used as a way to gain access to the larger, you know, organization's environment. Anything in particular here that, again, in that sort of initial, this goes back, I think, the first blog came out in January, but referred to activity that went back at least as far as December, if I remember correctly, or it went back further into 2023.
Yeah, that's correct. The first blog, I believe, came out on January 12th, but it detailed activity that we tracked all the way back to December 2023. And what's interesting here, so the initial disclosure from Avanti happened on January 10th. And one thing that's really interesting about the timing of our blog, so shortly after the disclosure and some initial mitigations were rolled out, we saw UNC5221, our primary threat actor, right, that did the pre-disclosure exploitation. We saw them doing post-disclosure exploitation, which was much different from what we saw pre-disclosure.
So I think a piece of that is actually what makes this an interesting story. And I think you could obviously compare it to other examples where there's been exploitation of some edge infrastructure that's disclosed publicly, patches are released, there's blogs about the activity, and then you get this interesting activity that happens kind of after that, both from the original threat actor and in this case, a variety of other threat actors that start to look at ways to exploit that. So maybe walk us through what happened in this particular scenario after disclosure.
Yeah, so after disclosure, one of the things that we noticed was that UNC5221 conducted widespread exploitation of the two initial CVEs that were announced on January 10th. One of the things that was really interesting when we started comparing their post and pre-disclosure activity was the pre-disclosure activity primarily centered their infrastructure primarily used these compromised out-of-support CyberOam VPN appliances. And as they shifted to the post-disclosure activity, one, their exploitation, like I said, went wider, but then they also shifted their infrastructure from the CyberOams to proxy IPs. And one of the things that we saw them doing was they were targeting configuration and cache data on the Avanti CS appliances. And then as time progressed and, you see the inevitable POCs get released, we saw additional actors joining the fray, right? And then we also, in part two, we mentioned this bypass technique that we had identified. And, that led to a part three. And that part three covered activity that we track related to UNC5325. Where they were exploiting this bypass technique that allowed them to drop a custom web shell that we track as Bushwalk.
So again, one of the interesting things about this activity is you have other threat actors that start to become involved in this story. Maybe talk a little bit more about this. So this separate threat actor, the separate UNC, as of right now, we don't believe they're related to the initial threat actor, but they were involved in using a particular mitigation bypass technique that differed from the original group.
Yeah, so their activity was interesting. So UNC5325 chained an SSRF vulnerability with the initial command injection vulnerability from the first two sets. So to basically bypass the mitigations that were rolled out. This was a really interesting group. They came prepared with some really complex tooling, including a variant of LittleLAMB that we track as LittleLAMB.WoolT. And then if you're familiar with Mandiant reporting and some of our other blogs on Chinese espionage actors, you may know that LittleLAMB is a tool that we tie to a group called UNC3886. And so that was a really interesting find for us. We suspect with medium confidence that UNC5325 is UNC3886.
And maybe touch on a little bit of the challenges of attribution, because I think this is where this starts to become a little bit more complicated. When you move from a threat actor that you've identified exploiting this vulnerability as a zero-day pre-disclosure to now there's more information out about this vulnerability. There's other threat actors that are getting involved, such as UNC5325. And now you have to sort of disentangle as more threat actors are taking advantage of this or jumping in. You have to disentangle where one threat actor begins and another one ends. And kind of, you have obviously a variety of threat actors that for their own different goals and missions and ends would obviously want to, move in and try to use this prior to organizations deploying the patches. So maybe speak to just, whether this particular operation or just in general, that challenge, once you've moved to the post-disclosure stage of dealing with a zero day like this, how that changes the analytical environment that you're in.
Yeah, so I think it makes it pretty tough. And one of the things when we were kind of responding to this and as we saw POCs become available, we wanted to be really, really careful with our attribution. So we kind of took multiple avenues to like look at this. One of the really important things is like the timing. So obviously, the pre-disclosure activity we had pretty solidly tied to UNC5221, but as like time progressed and we saw more actors getting into like the exploitation game of these vulnerabilities, some of the things we had to look at was like the timing. Were they exploiting this like after a POC had just been released? You know, were we able to tell that they were using a POC? Like, so was, is there anything about their activity that that led us to believe, oh, hey, like this might be this specific POC? Some of the other things that are important that were, that we looked at were the tooling. So what kind of malware were they being used? What kind of infrastructure were they being used? Did it match up with other groups? Was it different? Was it unique? And then some of the post-exploitation TTPs were other things that we looked at to try and help differentiate, like, you know, these clusters of activity. Like, were they running specific commands once they got on system? Were they using specific file names? Or did they have a specific way that they would, like, run something or, I don't know, create, like, a task or something like that? So all of those things kind of come into play. And we just, you know, we kind of look at all the information we have and we try to be really careful because we don't want to like conflate, you know, two groups, because that can cause challenges down the road.
Yeah. For folks who have always wondered, you know, why do we have so many different UNCs? Why do we have so many different uncategorized groups? This is part of the reason why, is because situations like this, we want to be very careful in which we are saying this threat actor that's, you know, even utilizing the same, you know, POC is or is not tied to this other threat actor we see doing that. And I think another piece that you have to be careful in terms of avoiding conflation of threat actors is when we have multiple threat actors going after the same vulnerability, and we've also tied them to, or we have a suspicion of some level of confidence that they're tied to the same state sponsor, which I think we also had in this particular example.
Yeah, we do. We have multiple clusters of activity that we've tied to the exploitation of the Avant ECS appliances, and multiple of these clusters we suspect are, with some level, with varying degrees of confidence, are China Nexus espionage actors.
And then that, the question becomes, you know, if we see, you know, one of these groups exploiting the vulnerability pre-disclosure, but not necessarily these others, you know, there's questions from sort of an analytic perspective that you ask around, well, what's the connection between these groups? How independent are they from others? Are they sharing that exploit or not? And those are all things that, depending on the amount of data that you have, are worth kind of exploring to, again, to draw connections between the level of cooperation between, you know, groups that may be originating from the same or have the same sponsor at some point. Maybe we can also talk a little bit about just, again, as we mentioned, this sort of activity is not a new thing from what we've seen from China Nexus threat actors of the last year. How does this compare in your guys' minds to some of the other exploitation of public facing infrastructure, you know, living on the edge activity we've seen? And I guess most notably here, probably the one that we spent a lot of time talking about publicly last year, was UNC 4841. So similarities, differences between campaigns tied to that threat actor and to this activity.
Yeah, so I think that there's multiple overlaps that we can kind of draw between like these campaigns and like these clusters that we observed targeting the Avant ECS appliances to UNC 4841. So I think one of the first like kind of notable trends that we see across the two these two kind of events is that, you know, with UNC 4841, when like the discovery of exploitation happened, I think we have this in one of our blogs. There's like this graph showing like their targeting of appliances, and you can see like this huge spike when they're kind of discovered. And that's something, you know, we saw in this. Like, so once the disclosure happened on January 10th, we see this big spike in exploitation. So that, I think that's one interesting trend line. Others that I think are really interesting. So the appliance ecosystem malware, we talk about this in MTrends this year. I think we have a couple of blogs that talk about this. You know, that's something that I think is really interesting as a trend line across a lot of these campaigns targeting edge infrastructure, where you'll have actors that are either trojanizing legitimate files on an appliance, or they're, you know, masquerading as legitimate files to enable their operations. And It one demonstrates, I think, an intimate knowledge of a lot of these different appliance types, right? But then it also provides them a lot of different advantages. It helps them blend in. It helps them evade detection while also enabling their post-exploitation activity, like things like lateral movement and stuff like that.
Tyler, when you look at this operation, the threat activity associated with the Vonti exploitation, and you look at some of the other campaigns, as we've talked about, ONC4841, and what they've been targeting in terms of going after email secure gateways, how does this activity compare, differ? What do you make of it?
There's definitely some big similarities to some of the larger, you know, sets of activity we had, like Barracuda and the Exchange compromises, where once things go public, there's this wave of mass exploitation, just hitting a ton of targets without, you know, much particular targeting. They're just sort of widely doing mass exploitation of anything that's out there. So that's definitely a bit of a pattern. You'd think a lot of times espionage groups would want to keep a low profile, especially when they're discovered. But with these start groups from China, it seems like they're trying to maximize the amount of compromises that they can get before people are patching.
It seems like one notable distinction I see from what we saw from ONC4841 and to the point John was making about after the initial disclosure, how their operations changed. There was that spike of activity, which again, similar to what we saw in this particular case from ONC5221. But you also had, the ONC4841 actors seemed very ready to go with a workaround to try to, evade the mitigations that were put in place. I don't know if we saw something similar here, or it was just more of their strategy was quick, let's go exploit this as widely as possible before enough of our potential targets have, you know, put the patch in place and mitigated this threat.
Yeah, we definitely saw like a shift in the behaviors post-publication. So they shifted from just, you know, doing their intrusions and trying to get lateral movement to a lot of the initial activities was trying to export configuration, which includes some credentials. So potentially collecting things that they could come back and use at a later time, you know, just collecting as much as they could for some later operation.
And it seems also like there's the aspect where you mentioned, you know, cyber espionage actors want to obviously avoid detection, avoid being caught, avoid being attributed. But I guess one of the advantages that they have once this has been disclosed is because of, like we saw here, you have a range of other threat actors that are getting involved. It makes attribution a little bit more challenging at that stage. So they can also somewhat hide in the noise to an extent, or at least take some comfort in knowing that there's other threat actors that are out there that may be conflated with that original group.
You know, once the vulnerabilities are public and there's some proof of concept code out there, we start to see a lot of scanning just in general by, you know, security companies and individuals. So I think the threat actors can really blend in when they connect from Tor infrastructure. So they don't particularly care too much, it seems, at that point, because there's so much noise, they can kind of just blend in. And you can't really tell, like, is it scanning? Is it exploitation attempts? You know, until there's some, you know, web shell or malware being dropped, really, to confirm that activity.
So I think another interesting aspect to the story, or one that dovetails into a theme that got a lot of discussion last year around China Nexus APTs. We've talked about it here on the show before, which is Volt Typhoon. So the nexus of Volt Typhoon to this activity as one of the suspected ONCs that later shows up in this sort of post-disclosure period. Tyler, can you walk us through kind of how that took place and what that looked like?
Sure. So we've been working to try to identify some of the infrastructure that Volt Typhoon is using for their operations. And on that infrastructure that we've been tracking, in December, we saw them target some Netscaler systems that they were probing. And then a few days after the vulnerability, and actually a little bit after the mass exploitation, so around January 19th to 22, we saw them probe like a pretty limited number of Vonti Connect Secure devices. So probably just over 10 different organizations. So these are, you know, aerospace, energy, some health, some educational institutions. We didn't see them actually successfully exploit any of this infrastructure, but we saw them take an interest and connect to these devices. So we don't know if it was recon or just checking if you know, potentially there were systems that they were interested in, and maybe they were patched at that point. But it was pretty interesting to see them move in to use these known vulnerabilities.
And again, you know, an important point I think to emphasize here is, based off of what we've seen, no particular indications that the initial threat actor, which, similar to Volt Typhoon, we suspect to have a China nexus, ONC5221, that they were working with or doing anything in tandem with the Volt Typhoon cluster in this particular case.
That's right. And there was quite a bit of a gap from the ONC5221 activity, which probably wrapped up around January 13th. They just went a couple days into the public activity, and then they kind of disappeared. Whereas the Volt Typhoon was quite a bit later, and it wasn't really like any kind of mass exploitation. It was really just some probing of a few different systems. So maybe they were just developing some capability, didn't deploy it. We don't really know what happened there. We just like to keep an eye on what they're up to, and because of the potential risk for this group, make people aware that, you know, if they're being targeted.
So kind of wrapping this all up, I mean, we've, you know, there's a lot, obviously, as I mentioned at the beginning, there a convergence of multiple trends we've been tracking over last year. There's a lot more in the blogs too, which we'll link in the show notes, because as I, you know, mentioned, there's a lot of technical details and information which would be cumbersome to talk about in a podcast, but I would encourage folks to go read those reports, because there's a lot more detail there. But, you know, for both of you, as you look at this particular campaign and set of activity, and again, some of these like larger trends, how do you see how it fits in? What are your takeaways coming out of this? I mean, again, the trend around zero-day exploitation by these types of threat actors does not seem to be slowing or going away. That seems to be at least one lesson from this, but these type of technologies seem to be very much in the crosshairs of threat actors like this.
Yeah, so we've seen quite a big increase in China developing zero days, and when it comes to like network appliances, and it's really as a result of a law that they enacted back in 2021 that requires individuals or organizations researching vulnerabilities, if they identify something, to report it to the government of China within 2 days. And I think that this interest by the Chinese government in collecting vulnerability information, specifically on network security appliances, is telling of what their interest is right now. You know, things have shifted from the days when China did a lot of spear phishing to, you know, individual emails and collected their information that way, to now targeting more companies and, you know, getting in on these edge appliances that are, you know, generally aren't monitored that well. They're not running an EDR software. And a lot of the times they have access to credentials for the network. So they're a good place of entry for anyone to get in that wants to do some espionage.
Yeah. And I think for me, you know, like living on the edge, as like we kind of use it as like a way of describing these type of like attacks, right? It's not like necessarily a new technique, but it's something we're continuing to see a lot of. You know, we talk about it in MTrends this year. We've talked about it in multiple blogs, but it's definitely not going away anytime soon. And I think that, you know, we're going to continue to see this, and it's going to continue to be at the forefront of a lot of these large vulnerabilities. And when we start seeing like exploitation happening, we should, you know, assume that actors are going to be coming prepared with malware that's designed to live on a specific appliance. You know, they're going to come, we should expect them to come prepared with malware and tooling that's going to enable them to persist beyond remediation. Like, that's just something, you know, that we need to come to expect at this point. And, you know, like Tyler said, like the zero day exploitation just seems to continue to go up. You know, we kind of made a joke of hot O-day summer last year, but, you know, like it's spring right now here on the East Coast, and summer is approaching. So it's, you know, I think that it's going to continue to be something that we see and see a lot of, and we just need to be prepared. We need to be prepared to remediate and respond really quickly, because as we've seen in a lot of these cases, the actors, once the stuff is outed, they respond extremely fast.
Well, actually, to kind of follow up on that, because I think, you know, John, as you noted, this is not a new technique by any means. And I think even back to this may have been a couple of years at this point, we talked about how we were seeing that a lot in Ukraine with a lot of the GRU affiliated threat actors. So seeing this from Russian Nexus groups, is this something that you think we will see more beyond? Again, there's been a heavy preponderance of groups that we suspect have some sort of China Nexus that we've seen over the last year. But as this, and Tyler, I think for the argument you were making as to why we're seeing that particularly play out against these technologies, that makes a lot of sense. But should we expect to see this from a wider array of threat actors? So should we expect to see more Iranian threat groups doing this, North Korean threat groups doing this, more financially motivated threat groups doing this, even just as fast followers once there's disclosures, once there's, you know, POC out there for some of these vulnerabilities? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so I think like last year, continuing to, you know, to tap on MTrends, right? Like we have a really great article on MTrends that talks about this. And, you know, the Fin11 Move It campaign, perfect example of a financial actor doing something that, you know, we generally associate in what we've been talking about right in this podcast with espionage actors. You know, perfect example. You touched on Ukraine and like APT-44 operations there, something that we've seen them doing continuously is living on the edge. And yeah, so I think that we should continue to see this across the board. And I think we should expect it from a wide range of actors using whether it's a 0 day or even end days, like once a POC is available.
Yeah, and I think like in this case, we definitely saw a lot more compromises after this was publicly known and there was mitigations available. So I think like one of the big lessons here for organizations is to pay attention to the vulnerabilities and be aware of what's on your network so that that infrastructure and that those edge devices can be patched as quickly as possible. You know, you don't need a 0 day if you have a 1 day and somebody hasn't patched.
Excellent. Well, John used the correct updated terminology for sandworm, so we'll end it right there. APT-44, go check out that report too and blog if you haven't yet. But thank you both for this discussion again and your research into this particular topic. Always great talking to both of you.
Yeah, thanks for having us.